Welcome back to the program. Some people try and predict the future. Others simply invent it, and still others make those inventions possible. If it's true that it is entrepreneurs that drive the future, then there is no more important player than the men who coach, invest, and are the allies of those entrepreneurs. The class in this field is our guest today, William H. Draper III. For more than 40 years, he's been a linchpin of Silicon Valley, where he has turned entrepreneurial vision into tomorrow's reality. In his new book, The Startup Game, he takes an insightful look at how innovation, investment, and individuals truly change the world. Bill Draper is the founder of Sutter Hill Ventures. He's a former chairman of the Export-Import Bank of the United States and Undersecretary General of the United Nations. He's currently the general partner of the venture capital company Draper Richards. It is my pleasure to have William Draper here to talk about his book, The Startup Game, Inside the Partnership Between Venture Capital and Entrepreneurs. Bill Draper, thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you very much for having me.
Pleasure to have you here. Talk a little bit first about what the whole venture capital business was like when you started in 1959.
Well, it was orchards. There was no term venture capital out here in the West. There was a venture capital firm in New York named J.H. Whitney and in Boston named American Research and Development. But nothing out here in the West when we started Draper, Gaither, and Anderson. And that was on the Stanford campus. It was a very unknown kind of business. So my partner and I would go to out in a car out in the orchards and look for a plant that said electronics, and we'd knock on the door, and they'd say, "What do you do, venture capital?" "Well, what is that?" And then we'd say, "Well, we put in some money and take some stock and become partners." And the young president, often our age, would say, "Well, come on in, let's talk." And that's how we wasted many mornings.
Talk a little bit, and you discuss this in the book, the kind of ethos that evolved in Silicon Valley, the combination of modernity and of the old West, and really why it enabled so much of the technology business to ultimately take root here in California, in Silicon Valley, as opposed to places like Route 128 in Boston.
The main reason, I think, is that feeling of go West, young man, that's where adventure is, that's where opportunity is. And I think that's a big part of it. Stanford University, however, I give most of the credit to Stanford University for Silicon Valley, because they had this concept of nurturing young technical companies and encouraging them on the campus and off to be a part of their culture and their education for their students and graduates. So I think that had a lot to do with it. MIT, of course, was in Boston, but I do think they're a combination of two things. One is the kind of Wild West willingness to take a chance and Stanford University. Those are the two elements, I think, that were most... The weather didn't hurt.
Talk a little about some of the early players. Who were some of the early entrepreneurs that you came in contact with, some who are still around today, that really were the driving forces in those early days?
Well, you know, a lot of the names disappeared. My very first deal was with a man named Elliot Farnsworth. And I said, "Well, Elliot, what is a defibrillator?" And he said, "Well, lie down, Bill, and I'll show you." And luckily, he didn't plug in the defibrillator, but that was the very first defibrillator in the world. And, of course, it saved many lives ever since. His name was Elliot Farnsworth. Nobody's ever heard of him now, but Corbin Farnsworth was a very successful company. And there were, of course, David Packard and Bill Hewlett had already gotten together back in 1939. So that was well before our time. And so there was the Hewlett-Packard, Varian brothers were on the campus, and Stanford had this 99-year lease that they, because they couldn't sell any of their 8,000 acres by the terms of the will, Mr. Leland Stanford, they at least figured out how to bring companies onto the campus with a 99-year lease. Now they don't do that anymore, but there are not a lot of names that are around still. Steve Jobs was getting Apple going, though, at a very early stage, so his name is right in the news today, this very day.
Right.
So there are some names, but that are very important in the development of the Valley, but they often go in to oblivion.
What were some of the early clashes between the business culture, guys that were investors, people like you, that had sort of come out of a business culture, a business climate, and alongside the entrepreneurial, more technologically based, more Wild West culture of some of these entrepreneurs?
Well, I think we became partners, so we got tainted. We, the venture capitalists, got tainted with that Wild West feeling, and we worked as partners. We'd sit down informally and work out a deal to start with. I used to write it on a yellow piece of paper, what the agreement was, tell them to take the paper home, study it, and if they thought it was a fair thing and they had all the elements in it, call me and we'd go ahead and get it written up by a lawyer. There was no such thing as a term sheet. That term wasn't even known. Then we'd get together. Let's say we had the deal. We'd all together. We become partners. We meet informally. A board meeting would be three or four people sitting around and kind of getting to know each other and learn the problems and then try to solve them together. So it was not an uptight, suited businessman from the East trying to get along with a Western type gunslinger. It's much more of a partnership, and that's the point in the book, that all of this, a really good venture capitalist can bring a lot of Rolodex, a lot of contacts, customer connections, and financial strength later on. And a weak one will sort of just constantly poke at problems and make the life of the entrepreneur miserable. So the entrepreneur should do a very thorough job of investigating the venture capitalist, as well as just like the venture capitalist does a lot of due diligence on who the entrepreneur is and what his reputation is or her reputation.
Right.
And back in those days, there were no hers.
Right. One of the things you talk about often is those first board meetings and what you would discover in some of those situations about the entrepreneurs you were investing in.
Yeah, sometimes that was considered the, oh, gosh, meeting, you know, oh, gosh, I wish I had known that. And that first meeting, you learn a little bit more about what you should have found out. But I started Activision, and it was four guys sitting around, and I asked all of them what they wanted to do, you know, with their life as they got older. All we want to do is make games, every one of them said. We want to make games forever. And they did. They went very far. It's funny the way this works. You know, you get to know them like your friends or your family, and really people say, well, what's your, you know, who are your favorite deals? And it's very hard because they're all part of they're like your children. You can't pick.
Has there been a generational shift? In some ways, it seems as if the venture capitalists have gotten a little older, a little more mature, and yet the entrepreneurs in the Valley have gotten younger.
that's a very good point. The venture capital industry has become more specialized, a little more uptight, you're right, and a little less flexible, a little more mechanical in what we did, you know, what worked for us last time, and let's try and find something like that. And, of course, everything is the best ideas are the brand new ideas and the unique atmosphere that allows a certain service or product to be launched and be very successful. Yeah, it's a very, very good point you make that the very sharpest entrepreneurs are very often in their 20s, and the venture capitalists will do well just to grab onto their coattails. I backed a guy in came into the San Francisco office in sandals and shorts, and he was a wonderful creative entrepreneur. You know, there are all kinds of venture capitalists, and there are all kinds of entrepreneurs. Some of the very good entrepreneurs have some gray hair, so you know it varies.
What were the one or two or three things that you looked for in entrepreneurs that you were prepared to back?
I always looked for energy. I mean, you can tell walking down the street with a guy, the speed at which they walk sometimes has to do with energy. Anyway, energy, vision, the ability to kind of see the world around the corner, you know, good peripheral vision, some practical nature, and basically you want someone who is a leader and obviously, you know, takes charge in a room full of people that it will follow, he or she will command presence and shows leadership. But also I do a lot of investigation on what they've done in the past and how they've performed. Now, you can't do that with a 23-year-old. There isn't, but you can tell how brainy they are, the energy, the vision, and that kind of tells a lot about what the future will be like. Because if they're laid back and they're a bit lazy, they've got a reputation for not following through, they don't look into the details. Oh, I check a lot on what they know about the market, the customers, and their own product and details. You know, they're small. If they haven't really run them down, I'll never run them down. They're going to know a lot more about the business than I do. And so I look to analyze the leader more than I do the market or the product, because that leader will take a weaker product and make it good, a shrinking market and move into a bigger market and so on. There are others. Don Valentine always looks at the market first. He was vice president of marketing of Intel, and that's his orientation. Everybody's a little bit different, but he's at Sequoia, and that's a very successful venture capital company.
Right. Have we gotten to the point today where there are more dollars than there are ideas?
That goes in waves. You know, I think it's true. There's a lot of money that came out from Wall Street when they learned how much money we were making in the early days here. It poured in pretty fast, too fast, and a lot of it was wasted, and that's what creates so-called bubbles. And then they burst, and you're back to it's a supply and demand kind of a thing. And it's a very, it's a very normal kind of business relationship between how much money is there and how much money is needed. I'm not one of these that's pessimistic about the venture capital community, although it's been a very low profitability in the last few years. I'm not pessimistic about it because I think that, you know, the ebb and the flow occur just over periods of, I've seen so many decades of this that it doesn't bother me. I think the future is very bright. What the venture community has done and the entrepreneurial partners have done is to make major breakthroughs for our economy. So it's good for America that there is a lot of capital around, so no venture, no entrepreneur goes unnurtured at the time of his creation, if it's any good at all. And of course, the venture business is very good if you happen to hit a Facebook or a Twitter or one of these very long balls, Groupon. And that's, or Skype. We were the first investor in Skype. And that just took off it almost was like a bird in flight that never touched down. And if you get one of those, the business has been very, very profitable.
Of course, as you point out, no matter how much due diligence you do and no matter how spread out the portfolio is, there are mistakes that are going to happen.
Of course. Oh, sure. And out in the West, we worry less about the mistakes. And back in Boston, I think they worry more. And if you're a failed entrepreneur out here, it's more or less a badge of experience. In Boston, you're once a loser, always a loser. I think you asked that question about Boston versus San Francisco and Palo Alto. I think that might be, definitely one reason that people come out here, because they know if they fail, they can get picked up and start over again and encouraged.
To what extent does the prospect of doing good in a broader sense, making society better as a result of either investments or entrepreneurship, to what extent does that play a role in the decisions that get made?
Probably not very much, but the fact is when, let's say, Mark Zuckerberg started Facebook, he wasn't thinking of all the good he was going to do for the world, and I'm sure he did not dream that his new company would have an impact on bringing down the president of Egypt. So there in the beginning, you just want to get into and the venture capitalist and the entrepreneur want to get something going that is going to be successful, in demand, and bears a price that will eventually make them money, the company money, and a lot of employees, give them a life.
To what extent has the business changed as a result of globalization? The fact that this kind of entrepreneurship that is going on in China and India in particular has really revamped the business in so many ways.
Yeah, I was the first, my partner Robin Richards and I were the first ones to start an India venture firm, a cross-border venture firm focused on India. We ended up using the Indian supply of technical help, engineering support, young, dynamic, entrepreneurial kinds of people that had been held down by Indira Gandhi and released in the as Manmohan Singh opened up the economy. It was perfect timing. We went there in 1994. By year 2000, we had returned 16 times the limited partner's money, and gotten to know a wonderful country, and met some wonderful people and encouraged a variety of new companies and financed them. So I'd say, you know, the working back and forth. Now, my son, Tim Draper, funded Baidu in China. China, and Baidu is the Google of China. Now, that is another way to go, in that you see something works over here, and then you start it up in China, which, of course, is a bigger market ultimately in numbers of people. And we, I think, have found that the interconnection between countries is nothing but good. And that's why I feel very, you know, excited about the entrepreneurial spirit of immigrants that come to this country. I think every other company started over the last 50 years in Silicon Valley and surroundings have had an immigrant in the starting team. And this is really exciting. But then also those that stay in China or India and develop big companies right from there. One is Infosys. That man is marvelous. Murthy is his name. He's the David Packard of India, and that was all based in India, but they were doing work for a big market here in the United States, and off, you know, outsourcing kinds of services. So life is going to get nothing but better as the world gets smaller, and products will get more exciting and come out faster. There'll be much more interconnection between cultures, and that's all good for the world. And I've got to say that it's really, you know, in this, we are watching a transformation of the world as democracy has legs much quicker because of some of these, the Twitter and the Facebook and the Skype that allow people to all get together from a very low level and talk to one another and overthrow a top-down dictator. This is one of the most important, interesting periods in history since World War II.
One of the things that's so fascinating about some of these things, in addition to the geopolitical consequences that you're talking about, is that there is a self-fulfilling aspect to so much of this modern entrepreneurship and technology, that the coming together of people from all over the world by using these technologies is giving rise to so many new kinds of ventures and so many new possibilities.
You've got it, Brent. You've said it very well.
Finally, talk a little bit about having a son in the business with you, how that works, and what advice do you give him?
Yeah, I only have one son, and he's in the business, and my father was in the business. We worked together briefly for about 3 years, and then I started my own firm. Tim started his own firm, my son Tim, and I've got a grandson who is probably going to be in the business. He's an entrepreneur. It's marvelous. I love working with my father, although I left because I wanted to have my own company. I joined Pitch Johnson, and we started up the forerunner of Sutter Hill. And I think it's marvelous if you can have a good relationship with your boy or your father and kind of either go directly into business together or do similar things. And Tim and I have appeared after I wrote this book, The Startup Game. Tim has appeared with me on the stage at Stanford, and he's going to MIT. I went to Harvard last weekend to talk about the book, but we are cooperating because he wrote an afterword in the book, and there's a good bit about that. And I should say then one other thing, that we both are partners in a Draper Richards Kaplan foundation that starts up. You talked about doing good things. I feel that the money we made on Skype, for example, went into starting up nonprofits, and we have now about 30 of them that we've started up. We give them $100,000 a year for 3 years, and then they're on their own. But we give them a lot of love and handholding, and very similar to venture capital. It's just starting up a nonprofit instead of a profit. We helped to get Kiva.org on the map, and mm-hmm. gave them their first big money, and the same with big money. It wasn't very big, but it was big to them at that time. And the same with Room to Read, which builds schools and libraries in developing countries. So we have that helps immigrants get organized and oriented in San Francisco, New York, and Chicago now. Wonderful woman named Jane Liu. This has been a good life. I've been so lucky to be here in the middle of the center of the technology universe.
William Draper, the book is The Startup Game, Inside the Partnership Between Venture Capital and Entrepreneurs. Bill, I thank you so much for spending time with us today.
I enjoyed it very much, and good luck to you.
Thank you.